To Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back, everyone. I was trying to get a connection here going here for a guest that we have having connection problems right now. However, with that there, welcome back to Perception Management. Again, today is July 4th, the second hour of the show here. And with that, we'll pick up White Rose.
Good morning, Keith. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to pick up a little bit on what Wolverine said. Ron Wyeth found the sulfur was 90% pure sulfur, burns at thousands of degrees temperature, and unlike any other sulfur found on the planet. He also found the golden chariot wheels from the Pharaoh at the Dead Sea, at the Red Sea crossing, where the Israelites crossed the Red Sea to get away from the Pharaoh. And he also found the true Noah's Ark, and they actually have in Turkey, in southeast Turkey, they have a tourist attraction that built on top of the Noah's Ark to protect it, and it's all fossilized. He shows some of the ancient metal that he used to put the thing together. They took photos with penetrating radar, and you could see the whole shape of the boat, everything. Perfection, exactly the length that is described in the Bible. He also found the true Ark of the Covenant, which was taken away by the Levite priest when Babylonian Talmud Pharisees first attacked Jerusalem, and it was lowered down into a cavern, which they carried away from the actual site where it was kept in the temple, and they hid it. And they covered it up where they built a wall to hide it. And it's hidden in Jedediah's cave, 20 feet underneath the actual crucifixion site where Christ was crucified. He found the hole where they put the cross in, and a crack from the earthquake running through the hole with dark material dripping down through the crack 20 feet down and landed on top of the Ark of the Covenant.
And this is, what you say, in Jerusalem then, or?
This is Ron Wyeth, and the Ark of the Covenant is on the Palestinian side of where the division is over there.
Yeah, I
okay?
haven't heard anything about that. We've
got to check out Ron Wyeth's work.
All right. We speculated a lot about why they were searching Iraq so much by taking a lot of the museum and stuff, because that's the old ancient hanging gardens. And Babylon, which was Baghdad, is the ancient Jewish center, you know. Anyway, I have to go
anyway,
here because I have...
One more thing real quick. He found on the Ark of the Covenant blood, a dark blood, dried up blood. He took it to a laboratory in Tel Aviv and had them bring the blood, saturate the blood with saline. They brought the blood back to life. The blood was living. The blood only contained 24 chromosomes. Normal human beings have what, 26? 23 from the mother, 23 from the father, right? This blood only had 24 chromosomes, 23 from the mother and one Y chromosome from the father, and the Jews are keeping it a secret.
Okay. Sounds good, okay. Anyway, my guest is on here, so I have to go ahead and drop you out here, but I do appreciate you calling there, and thanks for the information, all right? All right, with that, my second hour here, I have a special guest here that I have been following on Twitter for quite some time, as well as her writings, and I'm going to kind of throw a little joke in here at the first portion here, and that's nothing against my guest here, but she's live from Syria, and of course, not only is her work so good, but I compare her a lot with Aaron Matei from the Gray Zone. And she's an actual journalist who cares more about people and the truth than those of these empires today, and even more so of those in power and making sure that no one has their independence. After all, you can't have, like I say, a world government when people just want to be left alone. And so my guest today is Vanessa Beely, and the way the neocons want to spin her, she's about 3 years older than younger than I am, that is. She's a British activist, blogger, and she's knowing, this is where the neocons come in. She is known for sharing conspiracy theories and disinformation about the Syrian civil war and about the Syrian volunteer organization, the White Helmets. So that's what the neocons say of her. So what is really Vanessa here? Well, she was a finalist for the prestigious Martha Gellhorn Prize of Journalism, which was won by the much acclaimed Robert Perry that year there. In 2018, Vanessa was also named for one of the 238 most respected journalists in the UK by the British National Council for the Training of Journalism. In 2019, Vanessa was among the recipients of the Serena Shim Award, and she is Sharina, if I'm pronouncing that right, Sharina Shim, was the one who was a Lebanese-American journalist who was gunned down for this reporting of what was going on in Turkey at the start of this conflict over there. So with that, Vanessa, welcome to the show. I'm thrilled to have you on here.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me on. It was really good to touch base with you last week, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'd like to ask how you wound up in Syria and what you think of not only the country there, but its people and, of course, President Assad.
I ended up here on a rather sort of convoluted journey from Palestine, Gaza. Sorry, I'm just going to throw the cat out because she always interrupts my interview.
Oh, that's fine. I got dogs barking all the time, so whatever.
No, yeah. they might start off as well. That's life here. and so basically, through my father, who was a British diplomat, very much a fairly iconic Arabist of his time, pro-Palestinian, was in Egypt in 1957, so for the Suez Crisis then went back in 67 to negotiate after the Six-Day War with Gamal Abdel Nasser. In fact, Nasser would only accept my father to come back because he trusted him to basically come and act as a peace envoy on behalf of the British government that, of course, had betrayed Egypt at that point.
Yes.
And previously during the Suez Crisis, of course. So I sort of grew up in an environment where the Middle East was very central to our dinner table discussions.
Right.
After my father's death, I started to go through his papers and really sort of figure out what his role was, the truth about much of the Middle East that I hadn't really sort of focused on prior to that. And then in 2012, I went to Egypt and then to Gaza. I entered through the tunnels, and I was there during the 2012 bombing in November. I then stayed in Gaza basically, or rather I came back in 2013 with the intention to stay there and to set up various projects. I then had health problems which were diagnosed in Gaza, and I had to come back to France. But at the time that I was in Gaza, I started to pick up on what was happening in Syria. And I met Eva Bartlett, who I'm sure you also know, who at that point had founded the Syria Solidarity Movement. And so from there, I sort of got involved in it, and I started to really see there was something very wrong about the mainstream narratives and so on. I tried a couple of times to go to Syria, first time in 2015. I finally managed to enter in 2016 with the U.S. Peace Council delegation. And at that point, we had the privilege to meet with President Assad. And I say privilege, you know, because I've now been living in Damascus for almost 2 years. Prior to that, I visited the country every couple of months and spent 2 or 3 weeks on many of the front lines here, the liberation campaigns to free entire urban areas and rural areas from Western-backed terrorist organizations. And so we met with President Assad. We had a two-hour audience with him. I think all the other delegates would agree with me that we met with a man who had a deep, deep, deep love for his country. He, you know, we have to remember he's never left the country throughout this 10-year war, which has been devastating for the whole country, but he's never deserted his country. He's never deserted his people. And the recent elections, of course, in May the 26th, the Syrian people demonstrated their self-determination. And I was here when millions, literally, I mean millions of Syrians came out on the streets of every single area that is back under Syrian government protection. Since 2011, of course, the war has been fought to bring vast areas of Syria back under the protection of the government and the army. And literally, the Syrian people came out and said, we choose to resist. You know, that was the message. It wasn't really about the re-election of their president. It was about the Syrian people saying, whatever you throw at us, 10 years of war, some of the most punishing economic sanctions in history, I think, we will keep resisting. And we refuse Western intervention. We refuse Western interference. And, of course, when I say Western, I include Gulf states. I include the Neo-Ottoman Empire of Turkey. I include the Zionist entity, and so on. And so the people spoke, and they declared the West irrelevant, basically. That's how I described it in my article that I wrote immediately after the elections, because the atmosphere here was electric, actually. It was certainly unexpected for me, because I'd lived through a lot of the real economic devastation brought on by the Caesar sanctions that came in under Trump, of course. Mm-hmm. And really, people were exhausted, really exhausted, and struggling to survive. Of course, this is what sanctions always do. They are not ever targeting individuals, as of course legally they're supposed to do, they are unilateral coercive measures, collective punishment measures. You know, just as we've seen throughout history in Iraq, in Yemen, in Venezuela, in Iran, they are designed to destroy the people. It's another form of genocide, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm always impressed to the way that the media spins sanctions, like in the reference of Venezuela. They will place massive sanctions on them, and then the Western media will spin it as, look, they're eating their animals to survive. But they omit the fact that, you know, that the sanctions are causing that. Or, like with Iraq, with 500,000 children that had died, and Madeleine Albright said the price was worth it. Well, to her it may have been, but to those families and those children, it wasn't worth it to them, was it?
Well, no, and I mean, this is the inhumanity of the predator class in the West. And, you know, now, in my opinion, we're seeing the same inhumanity being turned against their own populations, of course, and effectively a hybrid war under the cover of the COVID-19, in inverted commas, pandemic, being waged against their own populations, just as they have waged hybrid war against target nations for decades, effectively. You know, and we kind of can't forget that many of these nations were built on genocides themselves. Certainly the United States was, Israel was, Saudi Arabia was, effectively. You know, so there is a commonality. There is an underlying commonality between all of these supremacist regimes that have been waging these wars of attrition and military wars and wars of terrorism. Of course, you know, if we go back to 9/11, the war on terror, and since the war on terror, terrorism has grown exponentially globally under the curation of the United States and its coalition.
Yeah, it's a shame when you look at it, too, because I've read your articles and I can see the humanitarian side of what you try to, bring forth. Yeah. The suffering and everything, and yet again our media here spins it to where like Assad is some evil dictator, and you know, I mean, and this is the same, it's the same with Maduro. He's a narco kingpin and he's funneling machine gun, they use that word, machine guns, and I can only think of all the arms the United States through the decades of the Contras and everything has funneled into the Middle East, the money, the drugs, all this stuff, and then they want to sit there and call someone else a dictator, you know.
Well, that's also how we connected, wasn't it? Because of course the main narrative, the kind of what I call the WMD narrative in Syria, is the chemical weapon narrative, and that is what has sustained the war against this country for 10 years. Despite the fact that now that entire narrative has effectively been seriously discredited by the OPCW revelations, by the coming forward of the inspectors that showed that the final OPCW report on the Duma alleged attack in 2018 was doctored to retrospectively justify the US, UK and France aggression, unlawful aggression, of course, supreme aggression against Syria, before a dossier had even been put together. And, you know, my point is that if we look at the global use of chemical weapons, you know, the U.S. has to be up there as number one. I mean, even here in Syria, we know that they've used depleted uranium, they've used white phosphorus, heaven knows what other methods they've used of course, polluting waterways, which they did in Libya, of course. They poured plutonium, according to some reports, into the irrigation systems and water water processing stations there.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a break coming up here in about a minute here, but I want to ask you. You mentioned France, and I remember reading an article there about these jihadists, or actually the Syrian government had found a truck or a few trucks that were loaded with a certain, I forget the name of the drug, but this is what these jihadists were taking there. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems like the it's called FUKUS. These are these nations that are always involved together, these imperial nations. Anyway, I have a break, so please hang on, okay? We'll be right back.
It's hung there on the front porch since this old house was built. It's where the old men whittle.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have? Do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank-you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
It's hung there on the front porch since this old house was built. It's where the old men whittle and the women piece their quills.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Perception Management. This is Keith Rogers, and I'm talking to Vanessa Beely over there in Syria about life in Syria. Vanessa, I have one question for you there. When it comes to these so-called rebel groups, like we know that like in Idlib, where it was like all these jihadists and stuff were all being protected. But I've followed the CIA for years now, and I've always found that every single fraction is always tied to the same holster, I'll just call it. And it, what gets me though is it, in the end, the CIA always turns these groups against each other in the end when they want to dispose of them. And I was wondering, do these groups even know how that works?
Well, I can't say I've ever sat down and spoken to them.
Yeah, well.
You know.
I can't blame you, I guess.
I mean, someone in my position and with my, let's say, solidarity with the Syrian people who are fighting this war against terrorism, I don't think I'd last very long with any of these individuals. Although, rather by mistake, in southern Syria, we did actually stumble upon not only an armed group leader, but also a White Helmet Center that was still operating. Luckily, they didn't actually recognize me or kind of make the connection as to who I was, and they assumed because I was a British journalist, I was actually sympathetic and would manage to get them more funding, but that's a slightly different story.
Yes.
Look, and Idlib, which is basically now, of course, the last enclave under the control of what is effectively al-Qaeda. I mean, you know, I tend to see this as gangs and counter-gangs, mafia operations dominated by the most powerful group or the best equipped and best funded, and al-Qaeda fits that description. So however many splinter groups there are, they will eventually still come under the control of al-Qaeda in any area that is occupied by these groups.
Do you remember do you remember the video of Hillary Clinton where she admitted that we in fact created al-Qaeda?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is the whole point. And not only that, but I mean, Brett McGurk had, I think it was last year, made the statement that Idlib is basically the largest al-Qaeda haven since 9/11. Ambassador Jeffrey, who was Mike Pompeo's point man on Syria, recently said al-Qaeda is our asset in Syria. Of course, the DIA documents that were released, I think, in 2013, also detailed the fact that al-Qaeda would be weaponized against the Syrian government. John Kerry, in 2016, in a closed session in the UN in New York, admitted that they allowed ISIS to flourish because they believed that it would be the best tool to depose President Assad and the Syrian government. So, yeah, you know, I mean, and of course you have Operation Timber Sycamore, which was basically, as I think you're aware, the CIA operation to arm the extremist groups. And of course, we shouldn't forget that the Muslim Brotherhood, which was effectively created by the British Empire in Egypt in the late 30s, has historically been instrumentalized against successive Syrian governments, including that of Hafez al-Assad, the father of Bashar al-Assad. And, of course, the way the Western media spins this reaction of Syrian governments against interference, foreign interference, military foreign interference via proxy is, of course, in the late 70s, Hafez al-Assad, in fact, in 1982, put down the Muslim Brotherhood uprising brutally and violently. But, of course, what they don't tell you is that leading up to that, the Muslim Brotherhood were massacring Syrian army cadets. They were suicide bombing areas of Damascus. So, you know, the sort of the campaign of violence and sectarian extremism is always disappeared by Western media. The atrocities that have been committed against the Syrian people since 2011 are simply not accepted. They're literally whitewashed. And, you know, that is my point with my investigation into the White Helmets. I raised the question of the fact that they are accused by Syrian people that lived under their occupation of organ trafficking, child abduction, and child trafficking. Now, if the Western governments were honest brokers, and of course they're not, but if they were, then if an organization that they have created and financed is being accused by the people they claim to be defending, and they're accused of spying.
I have a break coming up here again, so hold that thought, though, because I want to ask something else on top of that. So we'll be right back here, and then we'll continue there. So please stand by.
All my life I've been so lonesome.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
All my life I've been so lonesome. If happiness came, I missed the call. All my dreams have been so aimless.
Welcome back, everyone.
And now I'm so tired.
You're listening to Perception Management with Keith Rogers here in Montana, and we're talking with Vanessa Bailey over in Syria. Vanessa, right before the break there, you were talking about the Muslim Brotherhood and stuff, and I've heard that Turkey has a lot of ties to them, and I just read an article about that, in fact, but, you know, a guy can Google, or whatever browser you use, that Turkey sends fighters to. And it seems like Turkey is sending fighters to Greece, to Libya. And the other question I have is, while Americans are living in tents over here as the economy is being shuttered, The FSA, that the State Department is the one that bought the so-called FSA, all those Toyota trucks, which wound up in the hands of ISIS.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the insanity of this. Yeah, I mean, Turkey is basically recycling the extremist Muslim Brotherhood fighters from Idlib to the northeast, of course, where effectively it's created a buffer zone between Turkey and Syria, and is annexing Syrian territory in the process. Those same fighters have been sent to Libya. I believe they were also sent to Azerbaijan to continue the century-long genocide against the Armenians, of course.
Right.
Who are also being targeted in northeastern Syria, both by the Syrian Democratic Forces, which were effectively formerly the PKK, which of course, and this is, you know, another element of U.S. hypocrisy. The PKK were the reason that the U.S., I think, in the year 2000, started to put economic pressure on Syria, because their excuse at that point was that Syria was harboring PKK. Now, of course, the PKK has been rebranded as Syrian Democratic Forces, or the YPG. It's being sold as, you know, this democratic beacon in the northeast. In fact, what it is effectively is another settler entity, which is supported by the U.S. and, of course, Israel. Because we have to remember, under the Yinon plan, of course, the east of the Euphrates was to be seized effectively by the Zionist entity. And so, of course, they support the Kurdish separatist project, because they perceive it as this is probably a kind of temporary settlement on land, an ethnic cleansing of that land of Assyrians, Arabs, and Armenians.
Yeah, I kind of laugh at that, because that article out of foreignpolicy.com, where it talks about the CIA gave Saddam the chemical weapons, and I kind of laugh at this, because I think, you know, when you think back, you think, well, didn't Saddam gas the Kurds? And here again, you know, the U.S. is always doing this double play of friend, foe, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And Osama bin Laden, exactly. You know, they... This is the thing. I mean, the U.S. is just such a criminally dishonest dealer in global affairs. It's a rogue state, effectively. It adheres to absolutely no international norms, no humanitarian right conventions. It violates every single law, and as Putin has said on numerous occasions, without international law, we have global insecurity, and that is what the U.S. is effectively creating in this world in order to sort of shore up its supremacy and its unipolar vision for the future of this world. And of course, what we are very much seeing now, I believe, is a unification of what I call the resistance axis. And that was demonstrated very much with the recent let's say, defense by Gaza against the Zionist entity, and also the sort of semblance of a third intifada, the rising up of the Palestinian resistance against the Zionist entity in the occupied territories, and the support from Gaza by the armed resistance, which for the first time demonstrated the vulnerability of Israel. And we know now that Israel is effectively hemorrhaging civilians. Many of them are leaving. Many of them, I think, during the attacks by the armed resistance in Gaza, I think up to 40 flights a day were leaving, taking people to Dubai, to the Gulf states. So, you know, I think this was a huge turning point in the region. And since then, what we've seen is, I believe, a unification of the resistance across all sectarian divides. And we have to remember that another policy of the U.S., but when I say the U.S., I believe so much of it is driven by the U.K., because the intelligence resides in the U.K., the muscle and
money. British-Israelism, British-Israelism,
And, you know, we have to remember... that Britain's history of interference or of imperialism goes way farther back than the US. They've had centuries of preparing for, you know, manipulation of public opinion, infiltration or through soft power of target nations. The recent document leak of the UK Foreign Office documents, yes, exposing the extent to which they funded media and PR for these terrorist groups. You know, I don't care if they're designated terrorist groups internationally. That makes absolutely no difference to me, because the atrocities that they have committed here can only be described as heinous terrorism against, yes, the Syrian. Some of the testimony that I've received over the years is shocking, and it's traumatizing for me to listen to it, let alone to imagine what these people went through when they came under attack and lived under the occupation of these monsters, because that is the only way you can describe them. The fact that Western media has for years described them as rebels, as democratic, as civil...
Moderate rebels.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's really criminal. And if we adhere to any kind of sort of Nuremberg-based justice, then all of these media outlets should be held accountable for the blood they have on their hands. Because they have sustained this.
I forget the term that's used there, but it's something media... I forget the actual term there, but when you use a media to commit genocide, that the media is actually culpable for that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I made that argument quite recently, actually, in a talk on media as a tool of destabilization. And they should be considered complicit in genocide. I mean, let's look at, you know, how they've sustained the chemical weapon narrative, despite revelations from the OPCW inspectors who actually came to Syria and actually carried out the investigation on the ground. So the fact that the media is effectively protecting the unlawful aggression, the criminal aggression of their imperialist regimes, speaks volumes. And I think for a lot of people, the eye-opener was probably Aleppo. Because, for example, Eva and myself and a number of other journalists had been reporting the reality of Aleppo, and we were maligned for it. You know, we were sneered, yes, and credited for it. But when the actual liberation took place, and actually I think I was one of the few Western journalists on the ground at that time, and the media in the West was still trying to spin lines like the Syrian Arab Army is entering East Aleppo and it's raping women, it's rape, you know. And I'm standing in the streets of East Aleppo, and I remember doing an interview with RT, and I was furious. And at that point, everyone started to retract the stories. But nobody, the problem is the media is so duplicitous and deceitful. When it retracts a story, it does it in small print, right? When it's selling a story, when it's selling a headline, when it's encouraging war, when it's selling war, it's headlines. But when it retracts something, you know,
It's page 58. I was going to ask you, too, there. Just before 2014 or somewhere in that area there, when Russia brokered that deal to... you know, when the U.S. was throwing this red lines at Syria about its chemical weapons, or I'll just say chemicals, period. But anyway, the narrative was where Russia, as we were just talking about, the United States disobeys, doesn't care, whatever like that, threatens the ICC courts, whatever like that, you know. But Russia was using international law and was trying to broker a deal. And I remember when Hillary Clinton says Russia and China will pay. They were so mad that that Lavrov had brokered a deal to get rid of all the, and we saw the fanfare of the U.S. ships picking up this stuff, and a lot of those are taken out in the sea and kind of what they call it washed through the system like that to dilute them and everything like that, you know. But you know, this is an ongoing thing, so they couldn't use that red line against Syria. And the minute Trump comes into office there, they talk him into bombing Syria. And now we have Biden, the first thing he's in office, like, Ed, here he's bombing Syria, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, and also you mentioned early on Serena Shim. Of course, Serena Shim, she wasn't gunned down, by the way. She died in a sort of very suspicious car accident. And, of course, she reported not only the fact that NGO vehicles emanating basically from the UN were bringing in weapons and terrorist soldiers.
I hadn't heard that part.
But she also spoke about, I could be wrong on this, but I think it was the World Food Program trucks that were bringing in weapons.
Kind of like USAID.
Yeah, exactly. And this, in fact, brings me on to the most recent situation where Russia is invoking, of course, international law and Syrian sovereignty. And that is the rage of the U.S. coalition.
Yes.
Russia has managed to shut down all of the humanitarian, I call them rat runs, because effectively all of these humanitarian cross-border operations from mostly from Turkey, but I think there were a couple in Iraq on the Iraqi border under the control of the U.S. and Turkish proxies. Right. That were also closed down. But there's only one remaining in Idlib, which is Bab al-Hawa. Now, the U.S. is furious because Russia and China, again, are vetoing the maintenance of this crossing because, of course, they are arguing quite rightly that it should be the Syrian government that supplies humanitarian aid to its own civilians under the occupation of al-Qaeda in the remaining occupied areas of Idlib.
Well,
so what they are proposing...
Go ahead and finish that, okay?
So what they're proposing are working with WHO and WFP to set up humanitarian stations in the liberated areas of Idlib. And from there, they'll distribute aid to their own citizens in Idlib.
Okay, so the question I was going to ask on top of that, are there still, quite a few Syrians that are living in these kind of like displaced camps and stuff?
Yeah, there are. You know, Idlib is relatively complicated. The figures vary. I mean, some people, the Western media will exaggerate it up to 4 million. More conservative estimates are between 2 to 2.5 million Syrian civilians that, of course, were driven out of other areas into Idlib by various terrorist campaigns. And as in all other occupied areas are being held to ransom, their properties have been occupied by the terrorist gangs, which include the White Helmets. They are being used as hostages, human shields.
Right.
And they're prevented from leaving because, of course, in every single liberation area, the Syrian government and the Russians open up humanitarian corridors to allow people to leave and come to the safety of Syrian government-held areas.
Yeah, the reason I asked that was kind of like a two-part question there because... that's fine. Is when I first heard about this whole thing and I kept hearing about Syrian refugees coming to the United States, and I looked it up and the number was only like 2,000 or something like that. But they were trying to imply that people were fleeing Syria because of Assad.
Mm.
You know?
6 million internally displaced since the beginning of the conflict have all fled to government-held areas, just to give you an indication.
Okay.
Those that fled to, for example, Jordan and Lebanon are slowly starting to return as the areas where they were living have been liberated and rebuilding and restoration of all the devastation can start. But of course, under Trump, the Caesar sanctions were brought in, which of course penalize any country that comes to the aid of Syria and helps it. So, you know, what can I say? I mean, the collective punishment by the United States is abhorrent.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Vanessa, I have a little bit more information I want to put on the rest of my show here. So I want to go ahead and end the show here, with you. But can you give my audience here maybe some places to look up any information that you're in print with, whether it's Unlimited Hangouts or whatever like that, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I write, I collaborate quite a bit with Whitney Webb at Unlimited Hangout, The Last American Vagabond. I have my own Patreon, and I'm on Subscribestar. It's always quite difficult to say that. I occasionally write at RT, but my Patreon and Subscribestar are the two. Oh, and Rockfin, of course.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and I'll be talking to you more on Twitter about this later, and probably an email to that. But I do appreciate you coming on and kind of clearing up what's really going on over in Syria. I really appreciate it, okay?
Oh, I really appreciate you having me on, and thank you for giving Syria a bit of a platform.
All right. My love to you over there, okay? You take care of yourself.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. All right. That was Vanessa Beely over there in Syria there, and I was really glad to get her on the show here. So I have a break coming up here really short here, but I wanted to finish up with a couple stories here, which has to do with the pullout of Afghanistan here, which I think is important here. Thank you. But people don't realize what's going on behind the scenes, and they probably should. So with that, we'll be right back here on Perception Management. Stay tuned, please.
Money talks, but it don't sing and dance, and it don't walk.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
For over 20 years now, Extendabite has proven time and again, it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having. And I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Perception Management here on Republic Broadcasting Network. You know, a fun Google search is that you can use is you can type this in, U.S. withdrawals from, and you'll see all the treaties and stuff like that. But I wanted to talk about Afghanistan, and this is so reminiscent of the images of Vietnam, where, oh, say, May 1st, 1975, where a large pile of U.S.-made rifles were abandoned. This goes now with Afghanistan, where billions of dollars in arms were left. The Taliban had seized many, many tanks, Humvees, other support vehicles. And don't forget that $700 million worth of lost ammo over there. And, of course, I follow trends and stuff like that. And what was interesting is this was all lining up now to another U.S. policy. About a year ago, there was a video posted on YouTube called ISIL Target Russia. It was a feature documentary. What it was the Taliban and ISIL was teaming up, and they were in the hillsides headed in towards Russia. And that's on the cusp of not too long ago, where Joe Biden had said that the Taliban are not our enemy, as the U.S. prepares to negotiate prisoner transfer deal like that. And then the White House on Fox News come out and says that the White House backed up or confirmed Joe Biden's statement. So here again, the United States has been in Afghanistan fighting the alleged Taliban, and it's a lie. But anyway, my idea that I see here, and this is hyperbole, I guess you call it, is that the United States is going to push forward with their ground forces, which is these fractions, just like you see in Syria, other ones that were left behind in Iraq, other ones that were left behind in Libya, to further try to destabilize Russia. And again, you can't have a world government without taking out China and Russia, because then Syria, Venezuela, Iran, and the rest of these all fall. So, And speaking of Iran again, Iran yesterday commemorated the 33rd anniversary of the downing of the passenger jet where the U.S. murdered 290 people on board. And as another note, I caught the old movie Earthquake the other day. I watched it originally in 1974, where the main actors were Charlton Heston, Lauren Green, and George Kennedy. And when I saw it, we were in a theater there, and the vibration when the earthquakes came on, it actually loosened two ceiling tiles, which fell on a couple of the patrons there and scared the hell out of them like that. And, of course, that's also before Lauren Green had his quick breast augmentation, having his tit or nipple ripped off by a crocodile while filming Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom there. Of course, I liked him better in Battlestar Galactica. But historically, July 4th is where people from around the world, especially from here, but since Americans are scattered all over, you can say around the world, and people do celebrate fireworks everywhere, they would love to see more non-evasive ways of blowing things up. And, of course, with fireworks, you get a few fingers and maybe a hand once in a while might be sacrificed, but few actual lives are lost. So, we should look at that when people are out there celebrating tonight. But anyway, up next here, we have our Truth Media Reloaded with Tom Lacovara. Stay tuned, and thanks all for listening. And thank you, Sam, for everything in the control room there. And we'll catch you next week.
Money talks, but it don't sing and dance, and it don't walk. Long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans. Honey's sweet, but it ain't nothing.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease Off?
Go to easeoff.com, EAZEOFF.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new Easy 4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth!